Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the SmackDown review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of SmackDown. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review SmackDown, but also Monday Night Raw, NXT 2.0, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a mega quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, they're joined by Hamflett to review Friday Night SmackDown. What did you make of the show, mate?
I still don't know. Not as drab, I think, as SmackDown has been of late. They really tapped into something with this specific babyface version of Brock Lesnar. That's undeniable at this point, particularly in who they're pairing him with, which I'm looking forward to us diving into. And there were a couple of things that... So, like, peel back the curtain just a little bit. I wasn't able to watch SmackDown in full until midday Sunday. I was having the last of four nights out over the course of a week, which I'm too old for. I was too old for when I was 19, let alone when I'm 36. But, like, that was Friday, and I needed Saturday to recuperate. Obviously, I made time for Hook, Jesus Christ. But, like, other than that, my head wasn't ready for any wrestling, none of that sort of stuff. And then, obviously, with Hook and with Rampage in general, SmackDown was sort of last on the list. So I don't want to be the guy that just comes out and says on a podcast, oh, what an exhausting drone of an episode of SmackDown this was, because maybe I was just the exhausting drone in question. But I felt like they were showing us theoretical exciting things that were then not that exciting in execution. Over and over again, there was a series of things that WWE were probably thinking, oh, awesome, and then it played out and it was really not very awesome. And I guess it's when we work through this I'm going to decide if that was just very much my subjective exhaustion with life, not just with WWE but with life this weekend, or the fact that maybe the stuff that they've got just isn't that hot.
Major backhanded compliment incoming from me here. I thought, once again, this was a roller coaster of a SmackDown. I completely agree with you, with flashes of brilliance and then god-awful segments, like someone stealing a table with a sword in the middle of it that was never followed up on. But I have to say, I had a sensational time watching this SmackDown. Why? Well, first of all, I watched it on Sunday night. And managed to, I think, condense it down to about a 30-minute watch with double speed and skipping through all the bollocks that they recap every week. It's such an easy watch. There is going to come a time where I spend more time watching Rampage than I do watching SmackDown, and it's an hour long. This is the last SmackDown I legally have to watch this year. So it's done. It's finished. This is going to be me reviewing Raw tomorrow. What a brilliant episode of Monday Night Raw that I do not have to watch until 2022, baby.
I do not like D-Mob Happy Adam Wilborn at all. This has been a flashback to you from the last few years. Typically, I'm over the Christmas period worker and you're not. And we have our, like, parting ways on maybe the Friday before or something like that. Like, the way Christmas has fallen this year, there's like a full week of WWE TV coverage in there that needs addressing. Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It is going to be the bit in, it's in The Hangover, where Bradley Cooper's walking out of school as a teacher and one of the kids comes up to him. That's going to be me with all of WWE program. It's Christmas, kid. I don't know you. But I'll tell you what I will keep up with, and that is whatever's going on with the head of the table, who was absent on this show, and Brock Lesnar, and someone who deserves so much better. I like the fact he's getting showcased, maybe not demonstrating the best way to utilize him in ring, let's say, but on the stick, I just love him. Let's start to begin the show with Sami Zayn and Brock Lesnar. Sami Zayn comes out, He's in a wheelchair. He's got a neck brace. He's got a moon boot. I know that feeling, bro. And he's got two pretty jacked male nurses wheeling him out there. Looking forward to seeing them in there.
Well, one was a little bit like he was having a bit of the kiss of the hoses, wasn't he? Because at least one of the scrubs, like one of the guys put the scrubs over his massive biceps. The other one rolled them up so that like the bicep was put. I don't recall seeing like staff in hospitals thinking, well, I know I've got like cover my whole body, but how much do you lift? I'm rolling mine all the way up.
Spoiler alert, they are my picks for the NXT 2.0 previews this week. This is your thing, Evil Nurses. That's what we're getting. I'm going to pitch it tomorrow, so make sure you listen to the NXT 2.0 preview tomorrow to hear more about that one. So they do the whole recap of, him getting murdered by Brock and Roman last week and losing his title opportunity. He calls himself the toughest man in WWE. Says, look, they had to work together, Brock and Roman, to put me in a wheelchair. Two men who can't stand each other. Do you think it's a little bit weird that they had to work together to put me down? I was robbed. Quite rightly points out the referee. Maybe should have asked him if he was conscious before ringing the bell. But what really hurt about what happened wasn't what Brock did. It wasn't the German suplexes. It wasn't the F5s. It was the betrayal. Now he's got to do something about it. Now he's got to stand by his convictions and sue. He's going to sue Adam Pearce. He's going to sue Sonya Deville, the referee, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, and anyone who had anything to do with robbing him of his shot. Out comes Paul Heyman, struts down. He says, ladies and gentlemen, sorry you've had to be subjected to all this nonsense. He says that it's not funny. And for all the people to talk about litigation, it should be him. That's, quote, his people's shtick. Okay. Goes to do his usual spiel, but Sammy cuts him off saying he isn't done talking. There's a back and forth. They try and talk over each other. Sammy gets up out of the wheelchair, a la Linda McMahon at WrestleMania. Pat McAfee explodes when this happens. And he says, look, Paul, I wasn't finished talking. I know Roman Reigns isn't here tonight, which means you're all alone and you're disrespecting Sami Zayn, a world-class athlete, he says. There's no one here to save you from me. We all know what's coming. To be fair, it was contrived, but it was one of those things where, all right, you got me. There's no who will save this man? Roman Reigns is it? Brock Lesnar's music hits, of course. The crowd goes wild. I thought it was a fantastic way of saying, look, you haven't got Roman, but you got this mad bastard here instead, basically. And the crowd respond accordingly. He comes down, he's wearing in overalls. My God, how did he get this over? On a weekend where everyone was like, look at Hook's fight shorts. I was like, no. Look at Brock's in overalls, mate.
I think you'll find Brock has come dressed as Phineas Godwin.
Indeed.
Like, why are you watching any other channel?
He storms down. He grabs a steel chair from the timekeeper and twats the announce table with it, makes his way into the ring, opens the chair to sit on it, and then walks over to Heyman. What's he going to do? And he puts out a hand to Paul Heyman. Tells him to hand him the mic, and Heyman obliges. He sits down across from Sammy and says, Sammy, mate, what are you doing? What are you doing? How are you doing, actually, is what he says. Sammy goes, not great, to be honest. He goes, look at you, though. What are you playing at? Neck brace, all this bollocks, male nurses. He starts laughing. Sammy says, this isn't funny. Brock, shut your mouth. Oh, be careful. He says, hey, this is friendly Brock, which is my favorite persona, in my opinion. Maybe we just got off on the wrong foot. I'd like to apologize for last week. On a scale of 1 to 10, come on, how much does it really hurt? Sami Zayn immediately, 10, it's a 10. Emotional pain's a 20. He says, look, all right, I understand that, but come on, we're both Canadian citizens. I think at one point Sami said, yeah, Canadian alphas, which popped me again. He says, look, be honest. Could you have beaten Roman Reigns on your own? I did you a favor. You were never going to beat him on that night, and you know it. And Sammy goes, wait a second, so you injured me so Roman's win would be tainted? And he goes, yeah, now you're getting it. He asks where Sammy's from, Montreal, speaks a bit of French, tickled me, that did as well. And he says, look.
French tickler?
from one Canadian to another. Why don't you come out with me? Come out to my farm. We'll do a bit of fishing. We'll do a bit of hunting. We'll sit down and have a lovely meal together. Sammy says, I'm vegan. I'm not doing that, bollocks. He says, all right, yeah, whatever. Look, let's just get out of Hollywood. Get out of, you know, this mad bubble that we're in. Just go and do something enjoyable. How about that, eh? And he starts wheeling. Sammy doesn't want to go. And then goes, well, I guess we're going. It starts getting wheeled out of the ring. And Heyman goes, what the hell am I looking at? The animals that I took earlier must finally be kicking in. Because 2 years ago, this would have been a one-way trip for Sami Zayn to Suplex City. And now you're, what, Canadian besties? And he goes into the big spiel he always does about Brock Lesnar. And it takes Brock back to that place. He's in that orgasmic trance. And goes wild, beats the out of those nurses. Oh, I'm not sure if you're going to be able to bump properly. Well, who cares? Off your head comes. Out of the ring you go, you twat. And he turns around. Sami Zayn's trying to beg off, but he kicks Sami. And in this wonderful spot, he sort of, you know, he's meant to kick him. And so, whoa, Sami falls backwards. And he goes, whoa, and his chair sort of stays there. So Brock kicks him again out of his chair, chucks the chair out of the ring, picks up Sami, F5. And afterwards, as he's walking through the back, speaks to Brock Lesnar and says, what was all that about then? And he says, well, I don't know. You should probably ask my advocate, Paul Heyman. Perfect. No notes for me on this. What do you make of it?
Really well recapped, by the way, because you captured the chaos of the physicality, which I specifically enjoyed here. A real unhinged sense of violence about Brock's attacks, which it had to be because, as you say, Paul Heyman had inspired something in him. He'd wound the monster up and let him go. If I was going to be
Just a quick note. I think one of my favorite things with Brock, obviously he's just, you know, he's someone you have to be there to experience that aura. Mm. But I love, not just when he has to beat someone up, when he beats John Cena up or whoever it may be that he's facing, but when it's someone expendable, when it's just a cameraman or yeah. a nurse or any just sort of like, this guy's security, but just for the night, you'll never see this guy again. And he's like, well, we'll never see him again in WWE or potentially life because I'll just throw him as hard as I can and guess you'll have to sort yourself out. It reminds me of Randy Orton's face when he dropped one of the Singh brothers and was like, well, could have killed him.
It's a really horrific thought, the idea of like Vince or Bruce rubbing the thighs in Gorilla and going, nah, treat yourself. Go on, you go and treat yourself. It's been a hell of a year. Like with somebody's body, with a human body. Like, you go to you, Brock. A minor criticism was that I thought this went a bit too long for the point they were trying to make. But I will give everybody here a free pass in that regard because typically this is the first 45 minutes of SmackDown and down to one person to speak very slowly. Mm. So this was them trying to do the job of a Roman Reigns promo, wasn't it? So they had to drag things out a little bit. But Sammy was great. Brock is really feeling himself in this. Normally you don't get this for as long as we've had it now with Brock as well. This kind of rat tail baby face woodsman guy has been around pretty much since he came back to challenge Roman, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And normally, like what, Brock Party was what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that? Like he's really locked into this and more power to him. I hope it's only for a good time and not a long time, because we will gradually tire of it. But they at least got me back interested in a mystery that I was starting to feel a little bit tired of. This Paul Heyman thing was impressive, I guess, how they'd kept us all on the hook. But the line to Kayla, of course it had to be Kayla, was absolutely tremendous. Go and speak to my advocate was just the perfect way to send Kayla Braxton back to Paul Heyman when she doesn't want to have to interact with him anymore. Why go to the monkey when you can go to the organ grinder, as it were? But instead... yeah. No, back she goes, back to whole Paul Heyman to get put on this merry dance. I just really, really appreciated that as a way to try and get you back invested. And to be fair to WWE, because we're often like, you know, we try and stay on top of them even when they just do the same things over and over and over again. And you kind of become so immune to it and numb to it that you don't want to criticize them. It's nice to praise them for something. This story that's come out about them wanting Day One to feel like so big that fans clamor for it to be an annual event. That might be why what we talked about in the preview of the day is true. December isn't feeling like December.
No.
WWE. So maybe all it took was for this company not to like just run this entire month in first gear was to put a show on January the 1st.
Yeah.
Because with what's been going on with Raw and at very least the big stuff on SmackDown, this is the most December we've had in quite some time.
Absolutely. I just love the reuniting of Heyman and Lesnar, the sort of accidental reuniting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for saving me from this, you know, goober. And actually, whilst we're all talking about it, let's talk about what happened later on, because Paul Heyman's swaggering out of the arena and Kayla surprises him and he goes, oh, will you please stop doing that? And she says, well, what's all this about, Lesnar, sort of implying you're his advocate again? And he goes, well, will you please stop doing that as well? Not happy about these questions. He goes to leave and she goes, oof, what Roman Reigns is going to think about all this? And then he's got that moment of, oh, bollocks.
This is it, right? So next week, this is where I worry that sometimes I play a bit too fast and loose with this, because you can just about believe that Roman hasn't watched a video, because we know that when he's off, he runs around on an island, Billy Bollocko.
Yes.
Impressing his wife. What he does with his free time. So I'm willing to believe that he's not popping tapes in and catching up with what's been going on at work. However, when he does arrive at SmackDown, how long can Roman be in the building without somebody saying like, hey, what do you make of all his advocate crack? Or like Roman just alluding to, I did get wind of the fact that you looked like you were revving Brock up with your gack in your hand last week. I don't think you can do that in the middle of a packed building on a 2 million viewer watch show and not think I'd get wind of that. So I'm interested now to see how they do this again without doing Roman dirty. He can't look stupid. He can never look too thick about any of this or too naive. So I'm quite curious to see where they go with this bit next.
That was then surreally followed by Los Lotharios, the Handsome Bastards, against Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs. Now, of course, Los Lotharios has been a bit of a winning streak recently. Dominating, you know, stealing victories, you know, shenanigans, etc. But looking good. Then they lost in 90 seconds here. No idea what this was. Boogs goes in early. He's got this new gimmick where he just sort of gorilla slams his chest. I love looking at that man, so I'm fine with it. I also love the fact that they're bringing back the Monty Brown pounce. Yes, please. More of that in my wrestling. Yeah. Love a nice pounce. I also really like big dudes going to do something and either the person not coming with them or then just being a bit, you know, mistimed. So he goes to press slam Angel, whatever you're calling him now. And can't quite get him up, but he just goes, no, you're going up. I don't care how this happens. Press slams him out to the floor, picks up Umberto, just spins him round and round and round and round, slams him down. In comes Nakamura. And I just felt like Michael Cole wasn't watching, because I was like, oh, in comes Nakamura. He's setting up the Kinshasa. Michael Cole went, in comes Nakamura. And I was like, he's doing the Kinshasa, you knobhead. Kinshasa, 1, 2, 3, like 90 seconds, they beat him. I've no idea what's going on.
No, if this was on Raw, we'd offer it we wouldn't offer it the credibility of a review. And I feel like we can't do that here. You've sort of summed it up there. What on earth can possibly be going on that this ended in 90 seconds with a win for the babyfaces when the babyfaces seem to exist to get over the new act? It's also becoming, this is not a comment on the match, it's more of a general Nakamura observation. It's also becoming a bit of a thing. I feel that Nakamura is the Intercontinental Champion and his defense record is pitiful. On screen, I think he's had one since September.
Yikes.
What's any of this about? Like, SmackDown's not the good show and it hasn't been for a while, and this is just one of the reasons why.
Let's move on, because then we got King Woods' crowning moment. We're backstage, the Hand of the King, Kofi Kingston's there. Also there is the Viking Raiders, Ricochet, and Drew Gulak, who came dressed as Adam Nicholas for this segment, interesting. And they tease.
We've all tried, we've all failed.
They tease this before the break, but finally they unveil this new hideous looking crown, which just fits perfectly, in my opinion, for King Woods. He proclaims that they're going to take on, of course, the Usos and RK-Bro in the main event. And he promised that they were going to win and prove that they're the best tag team, with a slight apology to the Viking Raiders, who were stood right there. What do you think of the new crown?
I mean, it's hideous, but Woods pulls it off because of course he does. And it has, I'm assuming, some sort of like link to some kind of video game. It had a kind of video game energy about it, didn't it?
The shape
and the eye, but like that. So for those that appreciate it, they'll love it. And he, you would assume, is the best one. I had a bigger issue with this, and this is nitpicky stuff, perhaps. But you know what would prove that you're the best at something is by getting revenge on the people that tried to say that you weren't the best in the first place. Roman Reigns has just trodden on that crown. And he's got a new one. Like, you, like if you allow this to be the story, I'll tell you what's a better show than SmackDown is The Office. And in The Office, spoiler for anybody that hasn't seen up to about season 5, season 6, but there is an arc, shall we say. It's not a big spoiler for the plot, but there is an arc where Michael Scott of Dunder Mifflin wants to set up his own paper company. And it becomes a bit of a pissing contest between Dunder Mifflin and the Michael Scott paper company. And Michael Scott makes the point because he is, in his mind, immune to consequences, right? Oh, don't think you can stop me, because I will just form another paper company and another paper company and another paper company, and I'll keep forming paper companies. Like, this is an idiot character trying to suggest that there are no consequences to his actions. That's kind of what Xavier Woods is doing. You want to crush my crown? I'll just get another crown and another crown. His crowning moment was when he won it at King of the Ring and then had some heels, tried to ruin that. Could you not at least just get to the point of getting some redemption with that and then getting a new crown rather than just, I just bought a new one. Like, it's like, take that, bullies. Like, money out of my own pocket to get a new one made. So what's the real quiz?
Well, it was technically, it was from the coffers of the royal family. So, and the debt, well, didn't he say donations as well from, so.
I mean, I've seen people donating to worse things wrestlers have asked some money for than a crown for Xavier Woods. So, aye.
I also like the fact that you and I are sitting here going, it's probably gaming related or something. You ever seen that tweet where it's like guy watching movie when he's only ever seen the Boss Baby? And he's like, getting a lot of Boss Baby vibes from this. me and you are like, it's gaming related. Getting a lot of Rocket League vibes from this.
I haven't seen that. I love that. Yeah. This is very much like the opening scene of Boss Baby, isn't it? Right. Yeah, you're right. I love Rocket League King Woods. Me and you. Why haven't we been invited on the gaming podcast? I keep doing that thing with Scott, or Ben Roy whenever I see one of them, and it's like, oh, get us on the podcast. And he's like, yeah. I was like, I'm not joking. I've got 15-year-old takes on Grand Theft Auto to offer to the world.
Honestly, when Hamlet got me into, I got a Switch a while back. Actually, probably this time last year, it was around Black Friday, if I remember. And I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I've just bought Mario Kart because that's what I play when my mate brought it around, and I've had a great time playing it. And you were like, you used to get into Rocket League. And I was like, oh, yeah, Osley, who I used to sit next to, used to work at What Culture. I used to play that a lot. And I was like, oh, it looks quite good. It's football. I love football and cars. Yeah, they're all right as well. And then we got into it. And I'd be texting Hamlet about scoring like a last-second winner and running around the house whilst my wife looked at me, shushing non-existent audiences, going, shoo!
I haven't got time to fit any of the rest of them because I've just spent 18 hours on Rocket League.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Anyway, returning to the wrestling side of things, Drew McIntyre walks into Postman Pierce's office. Always loved this. Postman Pierce in his office, suit, you know, business attire. Drew McIntyre, pants and a sword. That's what I'm here for. To be fair, he was going out to wrestle next, so that slightly makes more sense. But I just love
work,
that.
Isn't it?
I love the idea of him just wandering around backstage with that. He brings Angela in with him, though. And we discover that a, quote, higher authority decided McIntyre couldn't be in the Battle Royal. Oh, good. A higher power storyline again. Pierce also said that, I think he said Sonya Deville decided that list, but it was the higher authority, basically, that made the final call. And he also said the higher authority decided he couldn't take Angela the Sword to ringside for his match coming up. So McIntyre just pierced it through Pierce's desk, which I appreciated, before heading out. Preposterous, this.
Adam Pierce gets a phone call hours before SmackDown the other week, and it just says, I don't want that scud-wearing freak in my battle royal. Not even a... He's got my sword. He's got my sword. And all of a sudden, he has to take him out of the match. Who could the higher authority be?
Hey.
Who could it be?
Maybe we'll never know. And then there was some completely unrealistic chatting between Tony Storm and Sasha Banks backstage. Sasha Banks put over Tony Storm for an accomplishment. Tony Storm said the words, pie back's a bitch, if I'm not mistaken. Banks went, yeah, also Charlotte Flair. And she said, oh, you can beat her. Just keep you cool and let Flair snap first, basically.
So bad. Sasha Banks, said to Tony Storm, amidst all that horrendous dialogue, words to the effect of, you know, you've got experience from wrestling all over the world. I know you can beat Charlotte Flair. And Tony Storm's like, yeah, cool. I really respect you too. All of that stuff is true. And yet this was the falsest interaction I've ever seen in my human life. 36 years on earth, and I've never seen two people that aren't actually human beings, but are in fact are. Sasha Banks was in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
What does WWE do to people? what is it like that they stand backstage and they force them into these situations? Tony Storm is not, she's not a first time offender with this one. I feel like there was a pretty infamous promo she cut when she was NXT UK Women's Champion that was particularly cringeworthy. But it is, again, so forced into WWE's house style. I just thought you had two actual stars on screen and you found a way to make neither of them feel like anything.
Yeah.
We don't always draw the backstage segments out for individual criticism or praise unless it's worthy of one or the other. And this was absolutely worthy of one of those. Yeah. This was really bad. Really bad.
Thankfully, it was followed by a brilliant hard-hitting match between two guys who love kicking the crap out of each other. Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre. Cesaro's watching backstage. I mentioned Ridge Holland, obviously, learning, sipping from the teat that is Sheamus. So, like I said, they just beat each other up. Sheamus goes to do that, 10 beats the thingy, but McIntyre reverses it, and then Sheamus counters it and chops. They're both chopping each other as hard as they can in the chest. Back and forth, Sheamus tosses McIntyre to the floor, but he misses a dive off the apron, and then McIntyre catches him with a belly-to-belly suplex. When we come back, Sheamus gets McIntyre up. Irish curse backbreaker, near fall off that, goes for White Noise. McIntyre slips out, chops Sheamus, future shock DDT, the old Claymore countdown. They loved it there. The crowd were really into this. As he goes through those, Sheamus counters and hits him with a great knee for a two count. Sets up for the brogue. McIntyre rolls him up for a near fall. Sheamus fights back, throws McIntyre into the corner, and he bounces straight out, hits the Claymore. 1, 2, 3. Just a nice 7 minutes of fun, this, and two guys who just love twatting each other as hard as they can.
It had absolutely no right to be as good as it was, considering how much we've seen it, did it? I know, we're kind of removed from the feud, but the feud was this year.
Yeah.
You know, it was still like a pre-WrestleMania diversion for the pair of them this year. And we saw some long, long matches in that series as well. I had a blast with this. I had a total blast with it. I like this so much that in light of what we can assume about what was coming next for Drew McIntyre, it was him. He appeared to be getting paired with Jeff Hardy for Madcap Moss, Baron Corbin, Happy Corbin stuff. And obviously now with Hardy gone, you assume that what they'll probably do is just pivot to a singles thing and it'll be Drew.
Or Cesaro, if they want to do that, I suppose.
Well, it's funny you mention Cesaro, because Cesaro was, of course, a victim of Sheamus and Ridge Bloody Holland and their new friendship. I've got the vibes of wanting to get these two back together, you know. Because if there's anybody else that should inspire Ridge Bloody Holland as much as Sheamus, it's Drew. Because this match, they were just mirror images of each other yet again. I think I want, like, make nice with Cesaro and let's have a hard lads group.
Yeah.
Let's have European head cases on SmackDown as a, like they're righting the wrongs of the League of Nations.
Yes.
Let's have these four guys just absolutely monstering losers and training Ridge Bloody Holland up to be the next generation.
They should all have like bar-related terms, pub-related terms, I should say, because people might get confused. So like the submission should be called the lock-in, or the finisher should be called closing time or time at the bar or something like that. I'd love that, yeah.
I got it. You know, like, imagine, well, I think I've changed my mind. Get Cesaro out because he's a coffee guy. He's not a beer guy, is he? He's a coffee guy. Like, Drew and Sheamus. So we're going to have three. They're going to be called the Treble. Right?
Yeah.
And then remember the old, like, Shield finisher? That's going to be called the Jaeger Bomb. Planting with the Jaeger Bomb.
And instead of kicking someone out of ringside, they have to go, you're bad!
You're bad! Which is what gets him in a feud with Cesaro, because he's like, I am the bar. He's like, no, you're bad.
Anyway, in the back, Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin stole Pierce's desk with a sword still in it. And this was never followed up on the show. But to be fair, we didn't have to have them on telly any more than that. So I was quite happy.
They sure did. Next week, they're going to have, is it Happy Talk?
Yes.
And there's going to be a table in the ring for the set. And then Madcap Moss is going to be like, this week, I'm Magician Moss, but what's under my hat? And he pulls away the top hat and there's the sword still on the table, which then you have to think about how they've transported a table with the sword in. Like, well, how many vans have Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin had to fund just to get this Happy Talk on the air? Because, yeah, they're going to transport a table with the sword in all the way to another building.
I'd like to think I'm professional when it comes to our podcast, Hamflet. And obviously, I said this is the last SmackDown I'll legally have to watch. But we'll obviously have to preview SmackDown on Friday. And a heads up, there's a hospital pass coming your way on that, because I'm going to say, what's next for Angela the Sword? So just get ready for that in a few days'
time.
Will
do.
Anyway, we got a nice tribute to Jack Lanza and looking back on his career. Obviously, our thoughts here at What Culture could go to his friends and family, an absolute legend. Then we got the backstage segment with Kayla and Paul Heyman that I mentioned earlier. And then we finally got Sonya Deville versus Naomi. Who'd have thought this match wouldn't actually happen? Both of us in the preview. What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from. So Naomi comes out, tells Sonya Deville, take that suit off, come down to the ring, let's have a fight. And she, to be fair, she does. She comes down, she's ready for action. But before it can begin, Deville gets a mic and announces. She's got a few surprises. We've got a special guest ring announcer. It's Natalya, who's apparently a heel now. It changes every bloody week. She's the female Big Show. And the special guest timekeeper was Shayna Baszler. I did like the fact that Shayna Baszler clearly was quite enjoying this. She had like a stopwatch and was like, oh, I'm going to keep an eye on this. but before the match can even start, Naomi dives to the outside. She can see where this is going. Attacks Baszler, attacks Natalya, beats them down. But obviously the numbers game allows to the heels to regroup. Sonya Deville goes out and they do the whole sort of Shield-esque surrounding, or Nexus-esque surrounding of the ring. It looks like, oh God, Naomi's going to beat her down. Who could save this woman? A debuting Xia Li, who's in Raiden, apparently. She appears on the entranceway, and she's got like lightning shooting out of her by the looks of things. And she comes down, and her and Naomi fight together For a split second, I thought she was going to turn on Naomi, and I thought that was the dumbest decision they could have made. They didn't do that. They worked together. They beat down the heels, and eventually Xia Li nails Sonya Deville with a kick to the head. It looks like Naomi's going to hit that split leg in a moonsault off the turnbuckle, but Baszler and Natalya drag her out of there. What a debut for Xia Li. She shoots lightning.
She sure does. I love that entrance. I put this to you this morning in our prep for this podcast, trying to, I don't know, collect my thoughts on this entrance, because I think I like it as much as I do, because otherwise, WWE's augmented reality as use has been rubbish, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Floating graphics in the corner. Like, it's just, they've got this incredibly expensive thing and produced the cheapest looking version of it.
Yeah.
So whilst in the arena, Xia Li, for a long time, is basically just moving her arms, like, back and forth, crosswise, and the heels, and I guess Naomi, have to stand there for a long time just watching. There was one time when the camera cut back, and, like, poor, who was it? I think it was Shayna Baszler. The camera was, like, sort of, she was in shot, and I guess she wasn't thinking, oh, God, I have to sell confused shot for, like, such a long amount of time that she was kind of had that little bit of a get-to-the-point face on. But obviously, for television, you need to see all this lightning stuff. A really impressive use of this augmented reality for something different, for something unique. She has leapt out of the pages of the comic book with which we've been leafing through over the past few weeks and emerged in real life. I like this. I think it will at least be something that kind of has your attention, I guess, for the next few weeks on SmackDown before the novelty starts to wear off. I think it's funny that we saw the debut of it in a run-in, because, like, you have to stop there. Remember when Rhea Ripley did it at NXT and they almost ran out of TV time?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here comes Ripley to save Bianca Belair in a minute when she punched the ground and said, this is my brutality. So it was a little bit of that, but it was pretty wacky, and I think I was there for that. I didn't like the attack, and I think that's why I was so half and half on it. The stuff in-ring was really, really sloppy, really, really contrived, right to the very last moment, which when you said, oh, Naomi goes to hit the split leg and moonsault, but the heels pull her out and they can't get her this time. She could have hit it, couldn't she? She had to stop herself mid-move because they weren't there to pull Sonya out in time. So I thought the execution of everything was perhaps undermining what was otherwise a pretty cool presentation.
Yeah.
They've done a better job with weird magic powers and Xia Li than NXT did.
Exactly. And you know, unlike we said Michael Cole on our preview, but I suppose Natalya is a first feud, presumably, for Xia Li is ideal, isn't it?
Yeah, they're gonna have, well, her and Shayna Baszler, I guess, they're gonna have really good, worthy mid-card matches with her. And Xia Li, don't be fooled by that half decent one on Sonya Deville, because there's a middle ground between that and the injuries sustained by Mercedes Martinez, I think it was.
Yeah.
Whereas Eileen's kick is sweet. So hopefully against either Natalya or Shayna Baszler, we see it.
We go to the back. Riddle's there with Mandy. They're talking about their upcoming match. And then we're introduced, huge pap in the Wilborn household, to the cast of Jackass Forever. Johnny Knoxville there, Dave England, Chris Pontius, some other guys. And he's asking them for advice in the tag match. And Knoxville's got this new move that's just grabbing someone in the cack, basically. Does it to Dave England to show it off. Pontius tells him to stay lubricated. I'll be honest, I didn't really pay much attention to this because I thought, oh God, I've got to Google when my big day out with the dad lease is. 4th of February 2022, put it in the diary. That's when it's coming out here in England, Jackass Forever. And then Riddle says, oh, what do you reckon to all this? And Randy Orton says, yeah, I can't be arsed, and walks off. But I just was so excited to see the Jackass boys on there, to be honest.
Right. This is going to sound very hypocritical coming from literally the oldest man at whatculture.com. I saw this and, too, got excited for the prospect of me, you and Sidgwick having a nice day out at Jackass. I was a, you know, Jackass devotee in my youth. That hit at just the right age for a bunch of morons in the early 2000s like us to just dive into. And the films were always, like, they were taking it to the next level. And I'm staring at these guys, and, like, I know Time's Arrow neither stands still nor reverses. It merely marches forward. But I didn't realise it could march forward so quick. Because, God damn, we not long ago reviewed the Jackass boys getting a battering off Umaga for the five-star review on Monday Night Raw. And I don't know what it is, but wrestling in 2006 doesn't look as long ago as the Jackass boys in 2006, does it? Oh my God. I'm glad those ones, at least specifically on screen, have made some good money out of hurting themselves on camera for a lot of years, because they are weathering the scars all these years on.
Pontius still looks all right.
Pontius does, doesn't he? He has stayed lubricated. Party Boy has, with advice for life, has stayed lubricated. But I feel like by the end of this, I was more on Randy Orton's wavelength in this segment than anybody else's.
And Migos is going to make a special appearance at Day One. Cool. That's all. I just thought I'd mention it.
Hometown thing, is it? Is that the crack?
Mate, you're asking the wrong person here. I've heard songs of theirs, but I'm so old, I don't really know what's going on. I guarantee if you look at my Spotify Wrapped, it ain't going to be many new artists. It's just, remember those songs you used to like 5 years ago? Yeah, just keep listening to them. That's what I've descended into now. Right, let's talk about this championship contenders match. Charlotte Flair, the SmackDown Women's Champion, versus Toni Storm. If Toni Storm wins, she is the number one contender. And Toni Storm did win. But let's get into it. Flair early on takes control, but Storm fights back, catches Flair with a crossbody for a two count. We do get a bit of let's go Toni chants, although I'm not sure if they were actually in the arena, if I'm honest. Flair comes back, goes for that moonsault off the top rope. Storm moves. Flair lands on her feet and does the standing moonsault, but Storm's on her stomach. Flair still tries to pin her. It was all over the shop at that point. Storm fires up, though. Rolls up Flair, gets a near fall. Small package, another near fall. German suplex, a two count again. Charlotte is furious at this point. We're getting just outworked or outfought or outfoxed by Toni Storm. So Charlotte bails to the apron, guillotines Toni over the top rope, slams her into the ring post, and then just beats her down in the corner. And yes, gets DQ'd for kicking too much ass. Toni Storm is the number one contender. But then Charlotte hits her with a big boot to stand tall at the end of all this as well.
Oh, bad match. Botches, but when they are immersion breaking, as some of the miscommunications were here, it becomes impossible to invest. And what was worse about that is that when you're already suddenly taken out of the match itself, it's only got about a minute to go. And they do what they've done so many times before and never get tired of, which is burying someone 6 foot under while attempting to get them over.
Mm.
Just this idea that Charlotte Flair, who wasn't acting like she was being driven to it, she just sort of thought, ah, sod it. Like, I can probably beat her in a title match, so I'll take this DQ so I can kick her in the head a bit more now, so I can kick her against the post. Toni Storm doesn't get her comeuppance, doesn't get to look up and be like, ah, but actually the joke's on you, Charlotte. Was it this match on the preview where I said, oh, I've got the horrible dreads of Toni celebrating her victory that was a roll-up on the ramp, thinking, oh, they're going to give Toni Storm the title shot, but it's going to be a worst-case scenario, Wilbon. And then you were like, WWE, hold my worst-case scenario bucket and let me pick another one out because we've got this one instead. Just hated this, man. Hated it. The fact that the match wasn't good before the lousy finish really didn't help. And what's worse, and I don't even know if this is the intention, but by pairing Toni Storm with Sasha Banks backstage for a brief conversation where you use Sasha Banks to try and give the rub to Toni Storm a little bit. Mm-hmm. After this, all I could think of was, oh yeah, Sasha Banks is on this roster. Once Charlotte Flair has defeated Toni Storm in the exact way we believe that Becky Lynch was going to defeat Liv Morgan, you can get to the match that's probably got a bit more to it.
Mm.
And that's not ideal for the person that you're trying to get over, is it?
No. Quick scan of the crowd. Reggie Bush, Maria Menounos, Jackass Forever. In X-Pac! Yes.
Yeah.
Get him back in a company. Put some respect on his name. Anyway, then another brilliant segment, to be fair, backstage. Postman Pierce is in his office when Brock comes in and he's terrified. He backs up against the wall and Brock heads towards him and says, I just want to say thank you for that fine and suspension. But the $1 million, I know that went to charity. And you know what? I had such a great time when I had that time off. I went hunting. I killed this giant moose. I'll show you a picture of it. He pulls out his phone. And first of all, I thought, of course, Brock Lesnar has a flip phone. But he can't get... I'm sorry, Pierce. I can't get this. Oh, I really want to show you this picture. And he snaps the phone in half. Now that makes a lot more sense. And I just... Yeah, fine. He says, oh, it doesn't matter. Anyway, let me tell you about it. I killed this moose. It was massive. And I strung it up. and I gutted it and I skinned it. And I eventually took about 220 pounds of guts out of this. And then, I cooked it. Have you ever tasted moose? Oh, mwah, it is a delicacy. Anyway, I thought, I want to remember this moment. I remember, you know, this amazing time that I had. So when I put the head on the wall or whatever. I don't really know what I do with all this.
Moose stuff.
He named it Pierce. And he said, I just want to say thank you. And then he looks at Postman Pierce to say, now you say it. Postman Pierce goes, thank you. And he goes, hey, thank me, thank you. We're all good, basically. Yeah. I just want to remember this brilliant moment. And the aggressive back pats. I think I could be a finisher, if I'm honest, with Brock. But not, you know, I'm not a huge fan of just intimidating Brock when he's a heel. Intimidating Brock when he's a babyface might be my favourite thing.
I mean, it's hard to imagine this going anywhere, isn't it? Because, like, unless Adam Pearce wants to, I guess, get in bed with Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman at this point and just confirm his heel turn, there's probably no story to this other than just doing it for the crack. But I'm bang game for Brock Lesnar, who has this reputation as a mercenary. He wants to come in, do his, and go home. To do this, because he's going above and beyond for him, isn't he? Like,
yeah,
my expectations are pretty low, Brock, and you totally exceeded them. if this is for nothing other than for a bit of pat there, I welcome it, quite honestly. I don't need more Brock versus Pierce. I'm not sure I want Pierce and a so-called higher authority ruling the roost over SmackDown and helping Roman Reigns in a potential feud with Drew or however that any of this spirals off and sprawls to. This is just funny. This is just really, really funny. Flip phone gag was great. Like, you saw it in his hand, you're starting to fear for the flip phone. As soon as it wasn't functioning the way he needed it to right there, and then you're like, this is doomed. This prop is doomed. It was great.
I can just imagine being Brock Lesnar's phone provider. Again, Mr. Lesnar, yes, no, we'll send out a replacement. Yeah, apologies for the software update, et cetera, et cetera. All right, main event time. Time to find out who the best tag team in WWE is. They revealed a Twitter poll where RK-Bro had won it earlier on, which just showcases how bloody over that team is when they're up against, you know, the Usos and especially the New Day. The Usos actually came out and cut a promo. I did like "Nope" as a new catchphrase. But they basically said they're not worried about RK-Bro and the New Day, and they're certainly not worried about losing those titles at day one. They're going to win tonight. They're going to retain the titles, et cetera, et cetera. And on commentary, I'd like to point out that Michael Cole noted that Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce invited RK-Bro to SmackDown tonight to determine the best tag team in the WWE. So I don't know whether that qualifies as a quarterly brand invitation or not, and I think they've forgotten about it. So we'll do exactly the same.
I think that should mean that for the Raw preview, you say, Baron Corbin coming to Raw?
Oh, don't you worry. I've got the best question for the Raw preview that you're going to love and Sidgwick's going to hate. New Day early on, get the advantage. Riddle worked the majority of this match. I thought it was a great story. And by the way, I'm jumping ahead slightly. I couldn't get over how much this crowd was like, oh, give me some fucking Randy Orton. Please tag Randy Orton in. He was like, oh, come on. It was like thinking back to, like, you know, when Cornette talks about, you know, giving a hot tag to the babyfaces when the Midnight Express would isolate someone. This is what he's talking about. Like, this was white hot. So early on, like I said, Riddle gets isolated. Jey Uso gets in as Riddle and Woods are fighting. He's done a blind tag. The Usos come in. All the four faces get beat down. New Day and RK-Bro sent out to the floor. Double suicide dive. And then, yes, the Usos drag Riddle to their corner and isolate him, beat him down. Orton tries to make the save for his friend. Referee pushes him out. And, of course, that only allows the Usos to double team him effectively, slam Riddle into the ring post. So then this is this story where Riddle, isolated, beat down, taking all the offense, but just desperate to reach out to Meany and bring him into the match. So Jay misses a splash in the corner and Riddle goes to make the tag, but Jay cuts him off. Riddle fights out again of the Usos' grasp, but just as he's about to tag Orton in, Jimmy Uso pulls Orton off the apron and slams him into the barricade. They are honestly climbing over the barricades, wanting Orton to get tagged in. Riddle fights back against the Usos, goes to the tag again, but this time Kingston comes in and jumps off Riddle's back to knock Orton off the apron. Even the New Day, they were like, no, fuck the New Day. I want Randy Orton. So Riddle hits Woods with a knee. Pele kick on Kingston. Finally gets to his corner, tags in Randy Orton, and the roof comes off. He comes in, he runs wild on the Usos. He tries to do that, you know, DDT through the ropes thing, but eventually he's on the outside, avoids a dropkick from Woods, back suplex onto the announce table. Kofi Kingston, back suplex onto the announce table for you as well. He finally hits that draping DDT on Jey Uso. Jey's recovered, though, goes for the splash. Orton avoids it. Jey rolls through. Woods blind tag. Orton RKOs Jimmy, so the fans get what they want. Then Orton gets hit with a super kick from Jey. Jey and Woods are, of course, the legal men. The New Day hit Jey with that backbreaker foot stomp combo. Kofi Kingston's been tagged in during this. 1, 2, 3. Turns out the New Day are the best tag team in WWE, but we already knew that. And Randy Orton is apparently the most over person in Los Angeles.
Yeah, really odd this. So, like, yeah, this was a good match, but so what? You get a million billion good matches a week now. WWE, watch and listen to their audience beg for one thing for what, like 16 minutes, and then that audience gets a minute and a half of it, and that's what they get, and then they shunt it out for what was about a 20 minute television experience. That's the trade you're making if you buy your WWE ticket these days. We're gonna give you what you want, but we'll give you a very, very, very tiny bit to make sure you come back next time. So you're kind of getting to watch the mechanics of that happen. Because Orton was the guy, and there was no denying it. And ultimately, it's, I don't know, I can't make up my mind, because the work was better than good. I'm being too flippant there. Like, it was very well executed and enjoyable at points, getting again to see RK-Bro interact as the like the added fresh ingredient in the New Day Usos stuff. Like, I really quite liked getting to see them as part of this little tag universe we've got going on. But even then, WWE book a match that, rare as it is, gets the New Day booed and then puts the New Day over in a match where the stakes overtly are, who is the best tag team in WWE? Is it the Raw Tag Team Champions, because they've got the belts and that's what that's supposed to mean? Is it the SmackDown champions, because they've got the belts and that's what it's supposed to mean? Or is it these other guys? These other guys, the guys you like the least. It's these, isn't it? What a strange and unique, only in WWE vibe this entire thing was. And I'll say this as well, and this is not a dig. Orton got this monster response, and RK-Bro are over, and the New Day are timeless, and the Usos just can go in these scenarios. But was this not evidence, when none is needed at this point, of the SmackDown problem that we constantly labour on? Roman Reigns is their main eventer and absolutely nobody else is. And SmackDown feels unfinished until his business is conducted. And with no business to conduct, I always think these episodes feel odd when they try and, we're out of time! Where's Tribal Chief? Oh, God, his office is it. This is actually it. That graphic goes up, doesn't it? So, yeah, like, that's not on these talents specifically, but no. I think it's a prevailing SmackDown problem.
Yeah, a wild conclusion to SmackDown. I just honestly, it was like being back in Saudi Arabia, those pops for Randy Orton. I couldn't get over it, but still. Hey, we'll talk more about this probably on the Raw preview, but they've got some money stuff on their hands with RK-Bro going forward. My word. Anyway, let us know your thoughts on SmackDown on Twitter, at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hanfler at...
Michael Hanfler.
You can follow me at Adam Wilbur. Follow us all at What Culture WWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Still got the AEW Rampage review to come and the Monday Night Raw preview a little bit later on today as well. But for now, this has been the SmackDown review. My thanks to Michael Hanfler. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.